that ticks us off, wants us to reach for the pitchforks and come together and start marching for, well, our billionaire class and start taxing the rich. That's what we need to be doing. Just my thought. Love to hear yours. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
For the first time ever since the adoption of the United Nations Climate Convention, parties agreed to introduce the loss and damage funding as an agenda item.
Crunch time for an agreement at the United Nations Climate Summit in Egypt. NASA projects sea levels will rise a foot by 2050. Plus,
we are now seeing that out-and-out denial is making an absolute comeback.
Climate disinformation is surging, deceiving the public about solutions.
All of that deception and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and, speaking of deception, snarky comment.
The socialist disaster known as the Green New Deal, which is destroying our country, will be immediately terminated.
If anyone could pretend to terminate a pretend non-existent climate policy, it would be Donald Trump. This is your Green News Report. I'm just sorry he didn't tell us that story about the windmills and not being able to watch TV at night or whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, disgraced former President Donald Trump repeated his well-worn torrent of lies and disinformation about the accelerating climate crisis and the booming U.S. clean energy sector in announcing this week that he has launched a third run for the U.S. presidency in 2024.
And America didn't go wild.
Moving on, October 2022 ranked as the fourth hottest October ever recorded since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They project that 2022 will clock in as one of the top 10 warmest years on record, despite a strong La Niña in the Pacific Ocean, which typically exerts a cooling influence on the global climate.
But Donald Trump said it wasn't going to warm for 300 years.
Yeah, he's wrong.
They say the ocean will rise 1/8 of an inch over the next 200 to 300 years.
A new paper from NASA this week confirms previous studies projecting that sea levels will rise on average by at least a foot by 2050 along the U.S. Gulf and East Coasts, thanks to man-made global warming. Again, that is a foot within 30 years, exposing billions of dollars worth of coastal infrastructure and development to higher storm surge and high tide nuisance flooding.
Gosh, I hope it doesn't hurt Mar-a-Lago.
In Egypt, it's crunch time in the final days of the UN Climate Summit, COP27, where the formal two-year process is now underway to reach a global deal for rich countries, who are primarily responsible for causing the climate crisis, to compensate poorer nations for loss and damage from mounting climate impacts. In an interview with Democracy Now!, youth climate leader Vanessa Nakate of Uganda warned that poor nations are already reaching the limits of their capacity to adapt to repeated extreme weather disasters.
We need this money to be able to go to communities that need it, and for this money to go in form of small, accessible grants. The current and historic emitters, they need to take responsibility for the climate crisis, and they need to pay for this crisis.
Also, the U.S. backed a proposal for the COP27 closing statement to call for a phase down of all fossil fuels. And the G7, the group of seven major economies, launched an insurance initiative to provide fast financial aid for nations hit by extreme weather disasters.
At the last COP, COP26, didn't they almost come out with a statement calling for the phase out of fossil fuels?
Yes, they did.
So this time they might actually do it?
Maybe.
We'll see.
A renewed blitz of climate disinformation coming largely from right-wing media is jeopardizing progress at COP27 by undermining public perception of climate risks and solutions and advocating delay. That's according to a new report by the Climate Action Against Disinformation Coalition. Their analysis found that Americans who watch Fox News are most likely to hold false beliefs about climate change and clean energy. They don't know about the global scientific consensus on man-made climate change, or that renewable energy is now cheaper and more reliable than fossil fuels.
Well, I hear it's not going to be a problem for another 300 years.
The Green New Deal and the environment, which they say may affect us in 300 years.
A second report exposed that fossil fuel companies are spending millions to run hundreds of advertisements a day in English-speaking countries that mislead the public about viable climate solutions. But some good news, Nigeria has become the first country in Africa to enact regulations to cut methane emissions from its oil and gas sector. Here in the U.S., Washington State has mandated next-generation electric heat pumps in all new residential construction. And finally, France passed a law mandating that all large parking lots must be covered by solar panel canopies within 5 years, which is projected to generate electricity to power more than 8 million homes.
Very cool. That's something you have been calling for years.
Oh, yes.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank-approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So our quote of the day from Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal. She is the head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. She was quoted by Politico saying Joe Biden wasn't her first or second choice for president, but she is a convert. She said, quote, "I never thought I would say this, but I believe he should run for another term and finish this agenda we laid out." And look, this is what I was saying before the election. Look, Biden was not my first, second, or third choice for that matter, but he was the right guy for the moment. He has governed much more to the left than I thought he would. He's been on all the right issues on the labor and on the, but he has done much more than I thought he, and good on him. Sure, he can't get a sentence out, but it's the policies. It is the policies that I'm thrilled with. And that's what we need to be doing here to share some thoughts on, well, should Joe run? Run, Joe. I've asked my good friend Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill's a political writer over at the Washington Monthly, Politico, and Real Clear Politics. Bill Scheer, thanks for taking time for us.
Always a pleasure.
So, you and I have had this conversation before. This is not surprising to me. Biden was not my first, second, or third choice. Mm-hmm. Not even sure he was my fourth choice. But we had this conversation. I've said he was the right guy for the moment. His policies are spot on: reshoring manufacturing, mm-hmm. investing in infrastructure, and strengthening unions. That to me, the secret sauce. I'm all on board.
Well, he's definitely kept the Democratic Party unified. I mean, the Democratic Party is much more unified than the Republican Party. One of the reasons why this midterm was not as painful for Democrats as a lot of people were expecting. He has made progressives feel like he has fought the good fight without alienating moderates, because Joe Manchin.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Thank you. are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
A Shiro's work is never done. You care for the house, the kids, and our future. We're so grateful for all you do. Now it's time to care for yourself and save a little more for retirement. A free 3-minute online check can give you the personalized tips you need to boost your retirement savings now. Visit aceyourretirement.org today.
A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Milwaukee has set a new record for homicides in a year. 194 people were killed in Milwaukee as of Saturday, surpassing last year's mark of 193. Police say the homicide rate is 13% higher this year than last year. The Wood County Sheriff is asking deer hunters to be on the lookout for human remains in wooded areas. Hunters, hikers, and farmers sometimes help crack cold cases when they come across unmarked graves. Today marks 1 year since the Waukesha Christmas Parade tragedy that killed 6 people, wounded dozens of others, and scarred the entire community. Flags across Wisconsin are at half-staff in remembrance. Governor Evers says the anniversary is also a chance to remember and honor the bravery of those who helped that day. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
People of color, college-educated suburbanites, and, you know, to get over that last hump, you got to make sure you're not doing too badly with white working class to get to that 50%. Republicans have a lot of white working class. They have a lot of Christian evangelicals, but can they do a little bit better with blacks and Latinos? Can they do a little bit better with college educated suburbanites to get over 50%? You know, Trump's victory in 2016 was a real fluke. Just barely won without the popular vote, but it made a lot of Republicans think, hey, we don't need to worry about the swing. Let's just juice that base, and that's all it takes. And of course, that didn't work in 2018, didn't work in 2020, didn't work in 2022, as far as flipping the Senate was concerned. So are they going to see the writing on the wall and say, you know what, we do need an adult in the room. The electorate thinks that we're not adults. Let them think that we're crazy and we're clinging to weird conspiracy theories and we're obsessed with fringe issues. Let's get an adult here, which would speak to a Pence or a Youngkin type. I don't know if the Republican electorate, the primary electorate, is thinking about winning more than fighting. If they like the fighting more than winning, yep, then they're going to stick with a Trump or a DeSantis type. Maybe even Kerry Lake would run for president. You know, maybe Tulsi Gabbard would run for president, or maybe these folks are going to angle the BVP for a Trump or a DeSantis. But that's the Republican divide. And on the Democratic side, if Biden begged off, Democrats have a different challenge, because if you want that nomination, you absolutely need African-American votes, particularly in the South. You got to win that South Carolina primary. You rack up those delegates in Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, Arkansas. You know, the candidate that does that in the last three presidential primaries wins the nomination. And of course, you do want black votes to be energized. You want that to be an energized electorate, have good turnout. But it's a somewhat different challenge to pick off some of that white working class at the same time. Not completely different, but there's different levers you want to pull. So we know Biden was sort of uniquely situated, someone who had relationships with the black community and relationships with white working class communities. He could stitch that coalition together. We don't know who else can do it right now.
No, that's a good point. You listen to The Rick Smith Show with Bill Scheer. Bill's a political writer over at the Washington Monthly, Politico and Real Clear Politics. We'll get some links out on how you can check out his incredible work. Now, again, you were talking about, the Republicans not being adults and clinging to conspiracy and all the fringe issues. And I think we're going to see that in the House. You know, the next 2 years of House hearings prove to be, well, again, back to the entertaining. You use the word nauseating, that too. But, you got Jim Jordan saying we're going to look into the Biden administration's anti-parent directives. They're not concerned about the raid on the Golden Palace, according to Jim Comer. There's a whole bunch of this stuff. We're going to throw some people off committees. There's a whole bunch of grievance and a whole bunch of retribution and vengeance. And this is what we're going to see over the next 2 years. In fact, I didn't know Benghazi had changed its name to Hunter Biden, but we're going to hear a lot about that.
I mean, if Republicans are going to have an investigative agenda and not a legislative agenda, then I mean that speaker is going to be the face of their party.
Yes, that's why I want Kevin McCarthy to get exactly what he wants, so he can get exactly what he deserves.
And if that's the face they bring to America, unless the primary goes in a different direction, maybe the House goes crazy and doesn't govern seriously, and there's no adults there, maybe that pushes the primary electorate to pick an adult and try to, but it puts pressure on every presidential primary candidate. What do you say about what Speaker McCarthy is doing with the shutdown? What do you say about Speaker McCarthy risking a debt default? Of course, I'm even presuming McCarthy is the speaker, which I can't even presume, or as it stands, he doesn't have the votes for it. But any kind of shenanigans going on there, the primary candidates have to answer to. And if the primary electorate is leaning into it, then they'll pick a Trump or a DeSantis type, and they'll just, go crazy for 2024. But I think the electorate in 2022 is saying, we're tired of crazy. We told you in 2018 we were tired of crazy. We told you in 2020 we were tired of crazy. We told you in 2022 we're tired of crazy. Will you please listen to us and stop putting up the crazy? But
we are tired of crazy.
That margin is so narrow. And from what I can see, McCarthy is so spineless that he can't get the crazy part of the caucus to get in line. And look, the Democratic Party, Democratic House leadership has been constant for 20 years. We talk about Democrats in disarray. They've had steady leadership for 20 years, Pelosi, Hoyer, Clyburn. And every time they get back in charge, they deliver. Maybe it's a little messy. Maybe there's some tension between left and middle. But at the end of the day, they find the sweet spot and they get stuff passed. On the Republican side, when was the last time we had Republicans running the House with John Boehner? He had to quit. He had to quit the job just to keep the government open. That is how impossible it was to keep the Republican Party together, because the Freedom Caucus was putting unreasonable demands on the basic legislation to keep the lights on. And so Boehner had to say, okay, Republicans aren't going to vote for keeping the lights on. I got to do this with Democrats. And since that means I'm going to get ousted, I'll quit before you can fire me. You could easily see the next Republican speaker being put in that same vice and having to make the same decision just to keep the government open.
No, this is why I want McCarthy to get what he wants. I want him to get what he wants so he gets what he deserves.
Whether it's McCarthy or somebody else, I mean, I can't predict if McCarthy can get to 218 or whatever the threshold actually ends up being.
218, right.
I mean, it can be lower, just to, for you headcount nerds out there. I mean, 218 is the majority for the House. But if there's a vacancy, if there's a retirement or a death, if somebody votes present, if somebody abstains, somebody doesn't show up to work that day, that threshold can go lower. So Pelosi often, there always would be a couple of malcontents in the Democratic caucus, and she would say, you can vote. You don't have to vote for me. Just don't vote no.
Just stay home.
Go vote present. Vote abstain. Vote for somebody else. Just give that. And then vote for somebody else wouldn't work. But you got to have enough presents or abstains to lower that threshold. And she always found a way to make sure she threaded the needle. So, but it requires cooperation. It requires people willing to want to avoid a total meltdown. And we don't know if the Freedom Caucus types on the House side, on the Republican side, are going to be that cooperative.
No, it's a good point. Last question I've got for you, because we saw that Merrick Garland has appointed a special counsel. This guy, Jack Smith, when I saw the story, it's one of those things, is this a good idea, is it a bad idea? And then I looked for reactions, Trump losing his mind, saying he's not going to cooperate, Republicans losing their minds. So immediately I go, this must be a good thing if they're not happy about it. I'm curious your thoughts on Garland's decision.
Well, I know there's some folks on the left, too, who are unhappy because they want the indictment now. And they were worried this is kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, we wanted the indictment months ago, but yeah.
Right. You know, I the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Let's see what the guy does. I mean, obviously, if you're going to prosecute somebody who was president, who is a presidential candidate, that is very, very high stakes. And, you know, partisans will support the Democrats and they'll oppose if they're Republicans. But there is a middle. There is a swing. And you want that swing to be convinced that this is on the level.
Yeah.
So you got to cross every single T and dot every single I. And hopefully doing it this way, if there is an indictment, it will be seen to the public as going above and beyond what was required to make sure this is seen as not being political.
Yeah, we'll see. Any thoughts on this? I know you don't usually do predictions, but any thoughts on where this goes? Or does this end up a black hole?
It's hard to predict. I find it hard to predict investigations because you can't be inside the room and you can't know the headspace of the people who are running the show. If from where we sit, it sure seems like they're indictable crimes. But, you know, they have to make the big judgment call. You know, can we indict and prosecute and win? Because you don't want to prosecute someone like this and lose, because that would be. That would be disastrous.
Well, what's that saying? If you're going to go for the king, you better get him. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things. But, Bill, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Bill Scheer, writer over at the Washington Monthly, Political and Real Clear Politics. We'll get links out on social media. You can check out the work that he does there. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, there was another shooting. 5 people dead, 17 wounded in Colorado Springs at a gay nightclub. This time, a little difference, though. As the story I'm getting, as I'm reading through this, and This is one of those things where it's amazing how these shooters always seem to, they end up making it to the other side. This person is facing 5 counts of first degree murder, 5 counts of biased motivated crime causing bodily injury, and a slew of other charges. But as the story goes, evidently this guy's been hospitalized, held without bail, because evidently the patrons of the LGBTQ establishment got a hold of him and literally stomped him with their high heels. And good. This is one of those things where you go, good, it's about time. So when this guy goes to prison, this is the best part for me. And I know there's no good in this, and it's a horrible situation. But for these people who, this person's going to go to jail, and it's always going to be remembered as the person, not who killed a bunch of gay people in a bar, but the person who got stomped by a bunch of gay people in a bar. A homophobe and a hate monger who got stomped. And I know there's no solace in that, but for the rest of this person's life while they sit in jail, that's what's gonna follow this person. And this is just disgraceful. And again, this is another example of, the story goes this person's related to another hate monger who, Trump supporter who, again, this kind of rhetoric that's gotten heated over the years. And look, I see it on Facebook all the time. This kind of vitriol towards people who are different. And I've always said, you don't have to participate. You can lead a different life. You don't have to go there. But what exactly is wrong with us as a society? And I know, it's not the gun, Rick. It's not the gun. It's people kill people, not the gun. Yeah, but the gun helped. And we're going to do nothing about this. This is going to be another situation where, nothing happens. But yet, more people are going to die. And for what? Because of the heated rhetoric that keeps coming out of our Congress. The heated rhetoric that keeps coming out of our media. Or out of a portion of our media. These right-wing loons who keep hammering on this stuff. It's nuts to me. Just nuts. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. You got questions, you got comments. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Also, remember, if you miss any portion of the program, download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. Make sure you share with your friends, especially the one who still wears the hat. I'm finding less and less people wearing the red hats, though. And that's a good thing. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that 320,000 United Auto Workers went out on strike against General Motors. The strike was part of a wave of work actions that washed over the country after World War II. Workers were growing more and more frustrated that company profits were soaring while workers' wages remained stagnant. During the war, most unions had abided by no strike pledges. But once the war was over, workers wanted their fair share of the growing American economy. In just 1 year, 5 million workers participated in more than 4,500 strikes. The GM strikers demanded a 30% pay increase. Walter Reuther, president of the UAW, also insisted that the company could meet this demand without raising the prices of their vehicles. He asked the company to open their books so workers and the public could see the full details of the company's profits. GM refused. They characterized Reuther as a socialist for even making such an outrageous request. During negotiations, Harry Cohen, the GM Assistant Director of Personnel, told President Reuther, quote, "Why don't you get down to your size and get down to the type of job you're supposed to be doing
as a trade union leader and talk about money you would like to have for your people and let the labor statesmanship go to hell for a while. The GM strike lasted 113 days. The workers won a 17.5% pay increase and improvements to vacation and overtime. But they did not get to look at GM's books or gain any say on how GM vehicles were priced.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
This election year has added a new season to our country's calendar, the silly season. Not silly as in fun, but as in asinine and pernicious. Forget any notion that America's elections should be about lofty ideals, important issues, and real ideas. Instead, right-wing screwballs have turned the GOP into the goofy old party, running campaigns based on frat boy stunts, horror movie scaremongering, and moronic games of hate your neighbor. For example, the GOP reached a new level of political degradation this year by literally gamifying its obsession with non-existent voter fraud. Party honchos have repeatedly been humiliated by failing to produce any proof of their wild claims that Democrats are running a massive illegal voting operation across America. So, they've turned their snipe hunt into a national game, forming online posses of GOP voter fraud vigilantes who compete to find and out illegal voters, post the name of an unqualified person supposedly scheming to cast a ballot, and you get 2 points. Name a group planning to bus illegal voters to the polls, bingo, you get 50 points. There are also bonus points if you report someone trying to vote by using the name of their pet or a dead person. Isn't this fun? But the funnest part of this sport is that you score simply by posting names. No need for any evidence that it's a real person, much less an illegal voter. What's the prize? If you get enough points, you get to be called a master. Wow, this isn't just silly, it's pathetic. This is Jim Hightower saying, far worse though, given the screwball fantasies of today's right-wing extremists, some of the GOP's vigilantes say they'll personally go door-to-door to get proof of fraudulent voting. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it looks like the Twitters are going to reinstate Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. And look, yeah, full disclosure, was against the idea of Twitter throwing her off. I'm a free speech guy. Let crazy people say crazy stuff. I'm a believer in more speech, not less, especially crazy people. Now, what I find interesting, again, you got Elon Musk, you know, positioning himself as the free speech champion. He's going to let the train wreck back on. Donald Trump's back on the Twitters, even though Trump has said he may not come back, probably not coming back. But he's not going to let Alex Jones back, which is weird. Look, I find all of them deplorable. But the fact that you're going to pick and choose when you're talking about free speech is kind of interesting. Just kind of interesting. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Maybe a little bit on the Elon. I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney to come share some thoughts. Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, thank you, Rick. As far as Twitter, I'm in your category that unless they do something, I don't know, out there to threaten somebody. I don't know about you, but I kind of get a little bit tired of this happened on, I think it was Facebook or Twitter today or whatever. Went to see something that said, warning, content. Oh, it was about Iran.
Yeah.
Content disturbing. And, you know, they were disturbing stories, but, you know, if I didn't know better, I would have said, oh, I better not look at that. But it was a story that needs to be told about what the Iranian government's doing, you know. So I don't know. I think some of it's carried away. Who cares? Who goes on there, unless they're going to say something like, you know, kill somebody or something, then that's a problem.
Yeah. No, that's not the argument that he made. The argument he made was something about that he had a child who died of sudden infant death syndrome, and That's why he's opposed to Jones and something with the Sandy Hook shooting. And look, I find all of it deplorable. But if you're arguing for free speech, if you know you're a purist, now you're splitting hairs. So, in which I'm in favor of on a certain level. There's some things we shouldn't be putting out in the public sphere, but you don't get to position yourself as both.
Well, also, I mean, if somebody, there's another thing, you know, the definition of hate speech in the sense of there's a difference of somebody saying, I don't like the way this person lives or something, versus, you know, somebody ought to do something about them. That's another whole category we could spend an entire show on.
You know, go shoot up a nightclub.
Well, that's different. You know, if somebody says, you should go do that. Although, I'll tell you on that story, I don't know the final of why he did it. We'll find out. But one thing that baffles me, can we say red flag laws?
Yeah, no kidding.
What are they here for? This guy threatened to blow his mother up. He had a gun. They went and arrested him and then dropped everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, red flag. Well, yeah. We better make that flag maybe a little redder.
Or pink, or even. I don't care. No, I was listening to a clip of that Tucker, and he's going, yeah, gee, we don't know why. We don't know why. You know, so he threatened to blow up his mother, and you go, shouldn't that be one of those things that, as a society, even the most, you know, from my cold, dead hands, NRA gun nut, shouldn't that be the red flag? You go, yeah, maybe that's a guy who was going to literally blow up his own mother?
Yeah.
Is that not...
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions, who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services announcing nursing homes will get a boost to help cover Medicare members' costs for next year. The current 77% cost coverage increases to 91%. The additional funding could reach nursing facilities in the next 60 days. The increase comes after recommendations from the Governor's Task Force on Caregiving, a significant amount of money going to direct care nursing and supporting the workforce in both wages and benefits. The pandemic brought attention to the long-term care infrastructure lacking. Many nursing homes have closed because of a lack of funding and staff. Wisconsin's aging population is expected to grow at a rate 6 times higher than the overall expected population increase in the state by 2040, intensifying the need for more nursing home beds and an increase in staff with the ability to provide a high level of care. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
My friends all on the Democratic side and the consultants and all the nodding heads that I know who are, you know, usually pretty good about predicting things like, oh, we got that extra vote. I'm like, whoa. You know, you might have two mansions, okay? You might have two. You never know. It's a split government. And so they're going to have to come to some type of agreement on debt ceiling. Now, again, when Bush was president, I called it the yawn vote. A couple people beat their chests. You stuck your voting card in, you hit yes, and you went to dinner. It was the yawn vote. Now, I don't know if they're going to return to that or if they're going to make it the last stand or whatever, but we have to remember right now it's 218 with 5 seats left, and even if the Republicans capture it, they don't have enough votes in the House. They might be majority, but they don't have enough votes. It's very possible that McCarthy will have less votes than Nancy Pelosi did as Speaker to spare. So there's going to be some. I think it's a good strategic move.
Yeah, I agree. Because ultimately, if it doesn't get passed in the House, it's going to fall on Republicans. But there are some who are saying even if it does fall on Republicans, you know, Democrats delude themselves that it's not going to filter down on them. And I'm going, yeah, but this is a way to get the Republicans to maybe take some shared responsibility in this as well.
Well, and it may. You know, this has been, the debt ceiling has been used as a weapon. It really has.
Yep.
And, you know, McCarthy warned that the Republicans are going to use the debt ceiling as leverage and demand spending cuts and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it has been used. They have weaponized the debt ceiling. And the reason I say that, I supported balanced budgets, and I was there in the days when we had Democrat and Republican votes on budget measures, because we actually used to do a budget. We actually used to do 13 bills separately, and you had to go item by item, and everybody had to be accountable, you know, like it should be. We did that. And in this particular case, I think that, you know, if they could go back to being responsible and again, not weaponize the debt ceiling. Here's the bottom line. They have already, whether they like it or not, or voted against it or not, these measures have already passed. This is, let's call it codifying what they already did.
Yeah, this is just paying the bill.
It codifies actions that they took previously. So how do you previously vote for continuations, which is what they do, not real budgets, but continuations. And then they, if they come back now, Republicans say, well, we're not raising the debt ceiling. Well, you did the appropriations. So why would you not follow with, you know, this, which is the natural process. Again, this used to be till Obama became president. It was a non-controversial vote.
Yeah, it was just a leverage point. Yeah, you're right. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I want to get your thoughts, because you said a moment ago, you know, about, you know, divided government and working together. I look at your state, you're in Ohio, a state that does not have a political divide. Republicans absolutely control every lever of power. In fact, interestingly enough, Your governor won by massive landslide and is basically irrelevant because the legislature now has a supermajority that can override anything he says. And I'm looking at some of the lame duck stuff coming out and the priorities that the Republican Party are moving on. Quite interesting. One that has caught my attention mostly, it's this constitutional protection nonsense that they're putting out. Have you seen this?
No. What is it on?
They're saying that if there's a constitutional amendment to be put forth, if it's put forth by the General Assembly, like a politician or someone, you know, a senator or a House member, it only needs 50% plus one to pass. But if it's put forth by the general public, it needs 60% to pass.
Okay, so they would change. Yeah, they would be changing the rules on the percentages that you need to put something to change the Constitution of Ohio. Then,
yep, you know, to get it to pass. I mean, this is one of those things. You go, wait a second. Why is it that you get? Look, if you want to make it 60% across the board, I understand that. I may not agree with it, but I understand it. But to say that if it's put forth by an elected official, it's one percentage, but if it's put forth by the general public, it's another, that just seems to me to be, well, that elitist, that corruption, that absolute power corrupting absolutely kind of thing, seems interesting to me.
Well, there's two problems, and I didn't see this story. I'm glad you brought it to my attention. I'll take a look at it. But having been in the legislature 14 years in Ohio, and I've seen many issues come and go on the ballot, some put on by the legislature, some put on by the public. But of course you had to have what I'd call a supermajority to do it. I mean, these are the kinds of things that can come back to haunt them. Because if you make it, when it comes to something with the constitutional change, if you make it, you know, super easy to do it, there's a reason. And I don't like... You know, I don't like the way the Senate has a cloture vote in the U.S. Senate. You know, I look at that differently. But when you're looking at something dealing with the Constitution, I think that having more than a one-vote majority to make it effective is better. But if you're going to have that one vote, then let the public be the same as the legislature.
Yeah, I mean, it seems the way it was explained to me.
The public having to have a bigger battle than the legislature does.
Yeah, I mean, but even this, I mean, just to get it on the ballot seems, I don't know, it seems much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But again, your state, interesting and fun. The craziness will ensue. You think anything positive is going to happen over the next couple of months in Ohio?
Well, I came from a legislature that was 1716. Think about this: the Ohio Senate, 1716, Democrat controlled, with Harry Michel from Youngstown, the late Harry Michel, as the leader. Then we went to 1815, the year I ran, three vote difference, and it remained that way. Then, of course, later on, it became, you know, super Republican. There are breakthroughs that can happen. I point, you know, Tim Ryan got 46% of the vote. He was massively outspent, massively, and wasn't given the assistance that he needed. So some people can, you know, make a rise and a difference, but it's not a two-party system. It's basically one-party rule, as we know in Ohio. And when it becomes that lopsided, usually you fight each other, and it ends up you don't get much done.
No, it's going to be an interesting year to see how things go. But as always, Bob, I appreciate the time. I'm sure you'll be here to keep us up to date on what's going on as the fun and the entertainment come along.
Get some popcorn.
There you go. Buy stock.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Our good friend Bob Ney. No, seriously, it's going to be an interesting ride. I'm going to take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the day that silk workers went on strike in Lyon, France. It was one of several strikes known as the Canut Revolts. Canut was a term used to describe Lyonese silk workers. During this time, the textile industry was the main source of jobs in Lyon. Half of the working population of Lyon made their living at silk weaving. Silk was decentralized during this pre-industrial era. 1,000-plus bankers and traders controlled and financed the manufacturing and sale of silk goods. These manufacturers contracted 8,000 chief weaving craftsmen known as the Canuts. The craftsmen were paid for a specific order or by the piece. Canuts owned their own looms. These craftsmen, in turn, employed 30,000 apprentices. These workers were paid by the day and usually lived with their craftsmen employers. Women were also employed, but at a lesser salary. In 1831, a downturn in the economy caused a drop in silk prices and a lowering of workers' wages. As a result, workers tried to get a minimum price imposed on silk. When their demands were refused, the workers seized a local arsenal. The insurgents took over Lyon after a bloody battle with the local military. There were 600 casualties and 100 deaths. The French government sent in a veteran of the Napoleonic Wars with an army of 20,000 to restore order. Faced with this force, the workers gave in without any more bloodshed. Some workers were arrested, but eventually acquitted. The minimum price for silk was abolished, and the revolt unsuccessful. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Lots of things I didn't get to today. I wanted to point out that Oregon Governor Katie Brown has announced that she's going to be issuing pardons for some 45,000 Oregonians who have been convicted of simple possession of marijuana. I guess that's people who have been convicted possessing 1 ounce or less in pre-2016 cases in which a person was 21 or older. I guess these are the parameters, but they're going to wipe their records clean. They said that the pardons will remove 47,144 convictions. Going to forgive more than $14 million in fees and fines to go along with that. Because, look, we're moving towards legalizing. And this is one of those things that I was saying. Well, what happens if you were convicted of a crime the day before? What happens there? Also, Alabama is putting a hold on killing people. Evidently, they have bungled a lethal injection. So their governor, she sought a pause, ordering a top-to-bottom review, because evidently they have had an unprecedented third failed lethal injection. And I'm going, how do you fail at that? How do you screw that up? Yeah. And finally, someone did their research. There's a movie coming out, Died Suddenly. Evidently, some right-wing wannabe cop, wannabe media person put together a bunch of videos of people falling out. Falling over. About basketball player, this Kenyatta Johnson, who collapsed. And you're supposed to believe that he died suddenly, only this guy this basketball player was, I guess, last week or a couple of weeks ago, player of the week in their his basketball conference. Never mind the reality. He during a basketball game, passed out. They carried him away. Thought he had a heart attack. And the argument was, this is vaccine related. It's the vaccine that did this. So basically, this died suddenly as a anti-vax haven. It's their wet dream, basically saying, the vaccine's killing people. And, someone, painstakingly took all of these videos of, because look, we got cameras everywhere. And people die, sadly. And now every time something like that, someone, dies suddenly, it's now COVID related. In fact, I was thinking about, I had a big brother when I was a kid, when he was 14. When I was 14, he was in his 60s. He had a massive heart attack. In fact, how the story went is, he was playing golf and had probably the best shot he had off the tee in years. And turned, smiled to his buddies, and was dead before he hit the ground. And it was one of those things where you go, yeah, that's how I want to go. Something I love doing, something I'm happy at, and don't even know it before I hit the ground. But in today's world, if that were videotaped, it would be because of the vaccine. And that's what these crummy documentaries are meant to do. It's the 2,000 mules of anti-vaxxers. Could there be problems? Yeah, but when you do this kind of stuff, it's crazy. Someone said to me, I expect at some point, the vaccine's going to be accused of shooting JFK, because that's where these people take this stuff. They did their research, and as I've said, the worst thing that's happened in this country is people go, I did my research, without actually knowing what freaking research is. So get ready for that. And the sad reality is, this is going to be, sadly hurtful to people who have had friends who have died from COVID. Because understand, COVID kills people. It has killed people. It has caused heart damage. This was the point all along. You don't want to get COVID because it does cause some long-term, people have long COVID. And this causes some problems. And I know I'm going to get canceled on the social media sites for bringing up the C word. But this, don't waste your time. And if you do, look at it for what it is. It's propaganda, trying to get someone some attention. Because evidently Stewie needs a little attention. Wannabe cop who couldn't actually be a cop. Now, it is what it is. But I wouldn't waste my time. Because again, it's all meant to divide. It's all meant to tear us apart. And again, forget I said anything. Never mind. Ignore that it was there. I appreciate you tuning in. If you missed any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast, or if you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher to Podbean, and everywhere in between. We are there. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email